as a representative for the Christian Science Monitor. And this letter into the prison ministry and the public practice of Christian Science. She has been a Christian Science practitioner for the last 16 years. This lecture affords her the opportunity to share some of her experiences with you and to discuss current problems we have in our community, such as homelessness, child abuse, and broken homes. She is a member of the Christian Science Board of Lectureship and has titled her lecture, Neither Villain Nor Victim. Please welcome Mrs. Smith.
Thank you, Howard, dear, for that lovely introduction. You know, I can't believe I'm here in San Francisco. Thank you, good people of California, for inviting me here and giving me an opportunity to share with you some of my thoughts on villains and victims. It's real nice to be here, to be in America. It's been a very exciting tour. Recently, I lectured at a church. It was a very big lecture. And there was a little boy, about six, and the whole time during the talk, he sat on the edge of his seat, gazing at me. And I thought, how wonderful a child so young is taking in this lecture. But at the end of the lecture, he ran up and he said, "Gee, lady, I love your sweater." He said, "What's it made from?" I said, "It's made from mohair." And he shouted, "Dad, her sweater is made from the hair of a mole." And his father said, "And what's a mole?" And he said, "I don't know, but it must be awful pretty." I said to him, "Well, the only mo I know is it ain't gonna rain no mo." Well, that's the only joke you're getting today. You know, this old world of ours seems to be made up of villains and victims. If you stop to think about it, we seem to have more villains even than victims. As you look at terrorism, you think they're the villains. Sometimes we look at government, at politicians, we think they're the villains. We think the villains are the people who are out in the streets pushing drugs, drug addicts. All sorts of people are villains. Our own parents can appear to be villains, our own children. And once we get into believing in villains, then we start believing that we or other people are victims. And when you believe in a sick world, you start suffering physically from this sick world. You believe in a sick world. You believe in a sick body. Because your body is your world. Your body is your concept of your world. So do you want to live in a sick world? Or do you want to see that there is a better world right here and right now on earth? This is a lesson that we all need to learn. I was interested to read an article recently in the October 1991 Reader's Digest. It's called "It's Not My Fault" by Pete Hamill. It said, I'd like to read you just a little bit of it, because it talks about victimism. That's the latest ism that there is in the world. One rainy morning last spring, Colin Powell went home to Morris High School in the South Bronx. He'd been gone for 37 years, and now, thanks to the poise and intelligence he displayed during the Gulf War, Powell was one of the most famous generals in recent American history. He stepped briskly from a limousine into a tight cocoon of security men and school officials. He smiled, he shook hands, he seemed not to notice the crowd of black and Latino men across the street, huddled in front of a shelter for homeless men. "What does he know about being down?" said one. "I've seen him on the TV. He talks pretty. A college boy. He's got everything he wants." Another joined in, then another, and soon the rap was flowing. They'd drawn the wrong hand in life. They were poor and black, or poor and Hispanic, or poor and luckless. They never had a chance. They'd been locked up by bad cops, flunked out by racist school teachers, abused by heartless welfare investigators. "Look what's been done to us," they said. But across the street, this chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff was talking to these kids. The core of a speech delivered in a gym with a broken roof was simple. Stay in schools. In school, don't take drugs. But such bromides were given renewed power because Powell spoke with the authority of success. And he was a black man who'd come from one of the worst slums in America. Then he delivered the morning's most important message. If you're black, if you're Puerto Rican or Hispanic, be proud of that. But don't let it become a problem. Let it become somebody else's problem. Thus spoke a man who'd spent his life refusing to become a victim. To hear this man speak was refreshing, because we now live in a nation that is sick with what I call victimism. And that's what's happening in our world. We all think we're victims of something or somebody. You just stop and think about that very carefully. Well, during my talk today, I can only talk from my own experience. How I had to learn through many, many years that not only was I not a victim, but that other people were not villains either. And that was the hard bit, to learn that. I have always lived in Belfast. I was born there. And for the last 22 years, during many years of the worst days of our troubles, I lived in a very troubled area, right in between the two factions of our community, where there was bombing and burning buses and shooting every night outside our door. We couldn't avoid it. We couldn't get away from it. We couldn't even sell our house. But on top of that, I had much violence to contend with in my own home, because I was married to a very violent man. Today I want to share with you some of the experiences that I had through that marriage. But my motive for doing that is not to draw any self-pity to me, but to show you how God led me out of that situation, how he protected me, how he provided for me, how he loved me and mine, and most of all, how he helped me to learn that my husband was not a villain either. That was the hardest part of the lesson. Now, this lecture is simply to show anyone who thinks they're any sort of a victim that there is answer through prayer, because God doesn't have any favorites. He doesn't love one more than he loves the other. We're all his children, and we're all precious in his sight. When I married many years ago, I had been the victim of child abuse from my own mother. I'd been beaten all my life, even until I was a young woman. And my greatest desire was to marry and to have a home and children, a place of my own. And I promised myself that when I became a wife and mother, I would be the best wife and the best mother that ever there was, because I would be so grateful to have a home of my own. When I met my husband, he was in the Royal Marines. He was very tall and very handsome. I didn't really get to know him very well, because although we knew each other about 3 years, well, he was away a lot of that time, and I only saw him when he came home and leave. He always had saved up his money and took me out to shows and theatres, and we had a lot of fun together. And I was quite in love and didn't see beyond that. But on the first day after I got married, I realized that I had jumped from the frying pan straight into the fire. Because on the first day after I got married, I received my first beating. And I didn't know why I got it. I couldn't even understand why I got it. I realized even then that I had made a mistake. But I thought there was no way I could rectify that mistake. Because in Northern Ireland, and especially in my own family, which was a very religious family, divorce was a dirty word, and my mother would not have heard of it. She took the attitude that you've made your bed and you lie on it. So I felt that I couldn't even talk to her or my family about the situation. And so right from the start, I began to hide it. If I was beaten, I stayed in until the bruises had healed up and told no one about it, no one at all. And I began to have such doubts about myself, because I began to think, if my mother beat me so often and now my husband is doing it, there must be something wrong with me. There must be something in me that brings out the worst in other people. And I really tried to search out what that something was. I had just become interested in Christian Science. Because of that, my mother had had a wonderful healing, and our relationship was restored, and I was very grateful for it. So I felt that I could find the answers to this marriage problem in prayer. And I didn't want divorce. I really wanted to work it out. And I tried for 30 years. I had 6 children. But the last one was stillborn because of the brutality that I had received before the birth of the child.